Chapter 7. At this point, it is necessary that you see a bullfight. If I were to describe one, it would not be the one that you would see, since the bullfighters and the bulls are all different, and if I were to explain the possible variations as I went along, the chapter would be interminable. There are two sorts of guidebooks, those that are read before and those that are to be read after, and the ones that are to be read after the fact are bound to be incomprehensible to a certain extent before, if the fact is of enough importance in itself. So with any book on mountain skiing, sexual intercourse, wing shooting, or any other thing which it is impossible to make come true on paper, or at least impossible to attempt to make more than one version of at a time on paper, it being always an individual experience, there comes a place in the guidebook where you must say, "Do not come back until you have skied, had sexual intercourse, shot quail or grouse, or been to the bullfight, so that you will know what we are talking about." So from now on, it is inferred that you have been to the bullfight. "You went to the bullfight? How was it?" "It was disgusting. I couldn't stand it." "All right, we will give you an honorable discharge, but no refund." "How did you like it?" "It was terrible." "How do you mean terrible?" "Just terrible. It was terrible, awful, horrible." "Good, you get an honorable discharge too." "How did it seem to you?"
"I was simply bored to death."
"All right, you get the hell out of here." "Didn't anybody like the bullfight? Didn't anybody like the bullfight at all?" No answer. "Did you like it, sir?" "I did not." "Did you like it, madam?"
"Decidedly not."
An old lady in the back of the room.
"What is he saying? What is that young man asking?"
Someone near her.
"He's asking if anyone liked the bullfight."
Old lady.
"Oh, I thought he was asking if any one of us wanted to be bullfighters."
"Did you like the bullfight, madam?"
Old lady.
"I liked it very much."
"What did you like about it?" Old lady.
"I liked to see the bulls hit the horses."
"Why did you like that?" Old lady.
"It seemed so sort of homey."
"Madam, you are a mystic. You are not among friends here. Let us go to the Café Fornos, where we can discuss these matters at leisure." Old lady.
"Wherever you wish, sir, provided it is clean and wholesome."
"Madam, there is no wholesomer place in the peninsula." Old lady.
"Will we see the bullfighters there?"
"Madam, the place is packed with them." Old lady.
"Then let us be off."
Fornos is a café frequented only by people connected with the bullfights and by whores. There is smoke, hurrying of waiters, noise of glasses, and you have the noisy privacy of a big café. We can discuss the fight if you wish, and the old lady can sit and look at the bullfighters. There are bullfighters at every table and for all tastes, and all the other people in the café live off bullfighters in some way or another. A shark rarely has more than four remoras or sucking fish that fasten to him or swim along with him, but a bullfighter, when he is making money, has dozens. The old lady does not care to discuss the bullfight. She liked it. She is now looking at the bullfighters and never discusses things she has enjoyed, even with her most intimate friends. We talk about it because there were a number of things you say you did not understand. When the bull came out, did you notice that one of the banderilleros ran across his course trailing a cape, and that the bull followed the cape, driving at it with one horn? They run him that way always at the start to see which horn he favors. The matador, standing behind his shelter, watches the bull run by the trailing cape and notices whether he follows the zigzagging cape on both his right and left sides, this showing whether he sees with both eyes and which horn he prefers to hook with. He also notices whether he runs straight or if he has a tendency to cut ground toward the man as he charges. The man who went out with the cape in both hands after the bull had been run and sighted him from in front, standing still as the bull charged and with his arms moving the cape slowly just ahead of the bull's horns, passing the bull's horns close by his body with a slow movement of the cape, seeming to keep him controlled in the folds of the cape, bringing him past his body each time as he turned and recharged, doing this 5 times, and then finishing off with a swirl of the cape that turned the man's back on the bull, and by cutting the bull's charge brusquely, fixed him to the spot, that man was the matador, and the slow passes that he made were called Berónicas, and the half-pass at the end, a media Berónica. Those passes were designed to show the matador's skill and art with the cape, his domination of the bull, and also to fix the bull in a certain spot before the entry of the horses. They are called Berónicas after Saint Veronica, who wiped the face of our Lord with a cloth, and are so called because the saint is always represented holding the cloth by the 2 corners in the position the bullfighter holds the cape for the start of the Berónica. The media Berónica that stops the bull at the end of the passes is called a recorte. A recorte is any pass with the cape that, by causing the bull to try to turn in less than his own length, stops him brusquely or checks his rush by cutting his course and doubling him on himself. The banderilleros are never supposed to use both hands on the cape when the bull first comes out. If they use only one hand, the cape will be trailed, and when they turn it at the end of a run, the bull will turn easily and not sharply and brusquely. He will do this because the turn of the long cape gives him an indication of the turn to make and gives him something to follow. With the cape held in both hands, the banderillero can snap it away from the bull, flop it brusquely out of his sight, and stop him dead, and turn him sharply so that he twists his spinal column, lames himself, has his speed cut, not by being worn down but by laming, and make him unfit for the rest of the fight. Only the matador is supposed to use 2 hands on the cape during the early part of the fight. Strictly speaking, the banderilleros, who are also called peones, are never supposed to use 2 hands on the cape except when bringing the bull out from a position he has taken and refused to leave. But in the way bullfighting has developed, or decayed, with emphasis increasingly placed on the manner of execution of the various passes rather than their effect, the banderilleros now do much of the work of preparing the bull for killing that was formerly done by the matador. And matadors without resources or science, whose only ability is their plastic or artistic talent, have their bulls, if these offer the slightest difficulty, prepared, worn down, dominated, and everything but killed by the skilled and destructive cape of an experienced banderillero. It may seem foolish to speak of almost killing such an animal as a fighting bull with the cape. Of course, you could not kill, but you can so damage the spinal column, twist the legs, and lame the animal, and by abusing its bravery, force it to charge uselessly again and again, each time recorting it ferociously, that you may tire it, lame it, and deprive it of all speed and a great part of its natural forces. We speak of killing a trout with a rod. It is the effort made by the trout that kills it. A catfish arrives at the side of a boat in full possession of all its force and strength. A tarpon, a trout, or a salmon will often kill himself fighting the rod in line if you hold him long enough. It was for this reason that banderilleros were prohibited from caping the bull with both hands. The matador was supposed to do all of the preparation for killing, and the killing himself. The picadors were to slow the bull, to change his tempo, and to bring down the carriage of his head. The banderilleros were supposed to run him at the start, to place the banderillas quickly and in such a position as to correct any faults of hooking, if they existed, and never to do anything to destroy the strength of the bull in order that he might come intact into the hands of the matador, who was supposed, with the muleta, to correct any tendencies toward hooking to one side or the other, to place him in position for killing, and to kill him from in front, making him lower his head with the red serge of the muleta and killing him with the sword, driving it in high up at the top of the angle between the 2 shoulder blades. As the corrida has developed and decayed, there has been less emphasis on the form of killing, which was once the whole thing, and more on the cape work, the placing of the banderillas, and the work with the muleta. The cape, the banderillas, and the muleta have all become ends in themselves rather than means to an end, and the bullfight has both lost and gained thereby. In the old days, the bulls were usually bigger than they are now. They were fiercer, more uncertain, heavier, and older. They had not been bred down to a smaller size to please the bullfighters, and they were fought at the age of 4.5 to 5 years instead of 3.5 to 4.5 years. Matadors often had from 6 to 12 years of apprenticeship as banderilleros and as novilleros before becoming formal matadors. They were mature men, knew bulls thoroughly, and faced bulls which were brought to the highest point of physical force, strength, knowledge of how to use their horns, and general difficulty and danger. The whole end of the bullfight was the final sword thrust, the actual encounter between the man and the animal, what the Spanish call the moment of truth. And every move in the fight was to prepare the bull for that killing. With such bulls, it was not necessary to give emotion for the man to pass the animal as deliberately close to him with the cape as was possible. The cape was used to run the bulls, to protect the picadors, and the passes that were made with it by our modern standards were exciting because of the size, strength, weight, and fierceness of the animal and the danger the matador ran in making them rather than by the form or the slowness of their execution. It was exciting that the man should pass such a bull at all, that such a man should be in the ring with and dominate such an animal furnished the emotion, rather than that he should deliberately, as now, try to pass the points of the horn as mathematically close to his body as possible without moving his feet. It is the decadence of the modern bull that has made modern bullfighting possible. It is a decadent art in every way. And like most decadent things, it reaches its fullest flower at its rottenest point, which is the present. It is impossible, day in and day out, to fight bulls that are really bulls, huge, strong, fierce, and fast, knowing how to use their horns and old enough so that they have their full growth, with the technique that has been developed, starting with Juan Belmonte, in modern bullfighting. It is too dangerous. Belmonte invented the technique. He was a genius who could break the rules of bullfighting and could torear, that is the only word for all the actions performed by a man with the bull, as it was known to be impossible to torear. Once he had done it, all bullfighters had to do it, or attempt to do it, since there was no going back in the matter of sensations. Joselito, who was strong, Belmonte was weak, healthy, Belmonte was sickly, who had an athlete's body, gypsy grace, and an intuitive and acquired knowledge of bulls that was never surpassed by any bullfighter. Joselito, for whom everything in bullfighting was easy, who lived for bullfighting, and seemed to have been made and bred almost to the measurement of what a great bullfighter should be, had to learn Belmonte's way of working. Joselito, the heritor of all great bullfighters, probably the greatest bullfighter that ever lived, learned to torear as Belmonte did. Belmonte worked that way because of his lack of stature, his lack of strength, because of his feeble legs. He did not accept any rules made without testing whether they might be broken, and he was a genius and a great artist. The way Belmonte worked was not a heritage nor a development. It was a revolution. Joselito learned it, and during the years of their competition, when they each had around 100 corridas a year, he used to say, "They say that he, Belmonte, works closer to the bull. It looks as though he does, but that isn't true. I really work closer, but it is more natural, so it doesn't look so close." Anyway, the decadent, the impossible, the almost depraved style of Belmonte was grafted and grown into the great, healthy, intuitive genius of Joselito, and in his competition with Juan Belmonte, bullfighting for 7 years had a golden age, in spite of the fact that it was in the process of being destroyed. They bred the bulls down in size. They bred down the length of horn. They bred them for suavity in their charges as well as fierceness, because Joselito and Belmonte could do finer things with these smaller, easier bulls.
They could do fine enough things with any bulls that came out of the Toriles. They were not helpless with any of them, but with the smaller, easier bulls, they were certain to do the wonderful things that the public wanted to see. The big bulls were easy for Joselito, although they were difficult for Belmonte. All bulls were easy for Joselito, and he had to make his own difficulties. The competition ended when Joselito was killed in the ring on May 16, 1920. Belmonte went on one more year, then retired, and bullfighting was left with the new decadent method, the almost impossible technique, the bred-down bulls, and as bullfighters, only the bad ones, the hardy, tough ones who had not been able to learn the new method and so no longer pleased, and a crop of new ones, decadent, sad, and sickly enough, who had the method but no knowledge of bulls, no apprenticeship, none of the male courage, faculties, or genius of Joselito, and none of the beautiful, unhealthy mystery of Belmonte. Old lady, I saw nothing decadent or rotten about the spectacle we observe today. Nor did I today, madam, for the matadors were Nicanor Villalta, the courageous telephone pole of Aragon, Luis Fuentes Bejarano, the valorous and worthy workman, the pride of union labor, and Diego Masquiaran, Fortuna, the brave butcher boy of Bilbao. Old lady, they all seem to me to be most valorous and manly chaps. In what way, sir, do you speak of decadence? Madam, they are most manly chaps, although Vialta's voice is a shade high sometimes, and the decadence I speak of does not apply to them, but to the decay of a complete art through a magnification of certain of its aspects. Old lady, sir, you are hard to understand. I will explain later, madam, but indeed decadence is a difficult word to use, since it has become little more than a term of abuse applied by critics to anything they do not yet understand, or which seems to differ from their moral concepts. Old lady, I always understood it to mean that there was something rotten, as there is at courts. Madam, all our words from loose using have lost their edge, but your inherent concepts are most sound. Old lady, if you please, sir, I do not care for all this discussion of words. Are we not here to be instructed about the bulls and those who fight them? If you so wish, but start your rider to talking of words and he will go on until you are wearied and wish he would show more skill in using them and preach less of their significance. Old lady, can you not stop then, sir? Have you ever heard of the late Raymond Rodriguez? Old lady, I cannot say I have. He was a young French writer who knew how to make his career not only with his pen, but with his pencil, if you follow me, madam. Old lady, you mean? Not exactly, but something of the sort. Old lady, you mean he? Precisely. When the late Rodriguez was alive, he often wearied of the tenuous, rapturous, and querulous society of his literary protector, Jean Cocteau, and spent the nights at an hotel near the Luxembourg Gardens with one of two sisters who were then working as models in the quarter. His protector was greatly upset and denounced this as decadent, saying bitterly, yet proudly, of the late Rodriguez, Bébé est vicieuse, il aime les femmes. So you see, madam, we must be careful chucking the term decadence about, since it cannot mean the same to all who read it. Old lady, it repelled me from the first. Then let us return to the bulls. Old lady, gladly, sir. But what finally happened to the late Rodriguez? He caught typhoid fever from swimming in the Seine and died of it. Old lady, poor chap. Poor chap indeed.